Avery, you should have come over on this episode of Nani's Tomb with Lena and Avery. The reason why I say, Avery, you should have come over, is because we have an awesome guest on the podcast today. Avery Cochran, welcome to the podcast. It's great.
Thank you, Avery Cochran.
It's awesome to find somebody with the same name that I have. And I'm really excited that you're on the podcast. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm super stoked to be here. I've never met another Avery Cochran, but as we were just discussing, I've seen you on Google before when I try to look myself up. It's great to actually meet you.
Yes, it is nice to meet somebody. Like, I think I found you the same way you probably saw me. Like, I look myself up on Google and just to see where my podcasts or how that was doing, and then came across your music. And yeah, it's pretty awesome to finally talk to you in person. I know we've sent some messages back and forth over the last month or so. And Lena's also here, so.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Oh, sorry, Lena.
I was going to say, I'm wondering if my husband's going to be my favorite Avery Cochran after tonight.
Oh my God. Wow. I would hope so, but I don't know. I might have a
good competition. The night's young. He might do something to piss me off.
Yeah, I'm bound to do that somehow.
I found you from like another podcast that you had. Something, it was before this one. It was like Mess Hall or something.
Yes, Mess Hall podcast. Yeah, I did that for about 5 years before I started this podcast. And
got it.
Food reviews. And I think it ran its course and we still love podcasting. So we decided to do a music podcast.
Cool.
I wouldn't say we're music experts by any means. We just like 90s music because that's what we grew up with. You're a lot younger than we are, especially younger than Lena is.
See, you could be my favorite Avery.
Your favorite.
One for female Avery.
So, yeah, I'm glad you found us and we found you. And tell us a little bit about yourself, your music. And
yeah, I'm a singer-songwriter, and I'm from Seattle, Washington, originally. I've been playing music my whole life, probably since I was six, singing in choir. And I started writing songs probably when I was 13. But I didn't start actually taking it seriously until a COVID passion project morphed into something that could be a career. So I'm taking it super seriously right now. It's a huge part of my identity, music. And I'm a recent college graduate too. And I studied political science. So that's kind of my other thing, but very different. Very different.
So how does that political science play into your music, or does it at all?
Not really, because I was in college right when the pandemic hit. I was a freshman in college. And then I went home for over 2 years. And that's when I started, when I was just like isolated and in quarantine, living with my parents again. I started writing music a lot, and I didn't have a major at the time. But then in 2022, I was like, oh gosh, I need to go back to school. So I went back to school and I studied political science, and I chose political science because, you know, I wanted something to, quote, fall back on just in case music didn't work out, because I was just starting. And I mostly was interested in it because of just everything going on in 2020, just like the politicized pandemic and just like everything, like all the social movements that were emerging too. So I was super interested in it because of that. And I've noticed that they kind of go hand in hand, political science and music, as like I feel like a lot of musicians are politically aware or just like have a lot of political opinions or have a lot of protest music or something. Not in the sense where like my political science degree will benefit me in a music career, but it might benefit me for generating songwriting content, I feel like, just because there's a sort of class consciousness that comes with studying political science and just like pessimism also. And I feel like that's good fuel for songwriting.
Yeah.
Awesome. I hope we hear a great political song come out, especially with elections coming up.
Yeah. 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 Oh gosh, there's a lot to say about that. I feel like most what if I could write something politically charged, it wouldn't be a specific song, but there would be maybe some one-liners in there, like about the state of the world or something, or just like using my thoughts on politics as a literary device to compare like the state of the world to I don't know, like something more personal.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I get that.
But maybe, I mean, a full-fledged protest song would be cool too.
Yeah.
You just never know. I don't know how to start that. But I do have a lot of thoughts.
Well, I hope we helped get those thoughts out.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for that little intro. It was awesome. We are looking back at the song Lover, You Should Have Come On, You Should Have Come Over by Jeff Buckley.
Mm-hmm.
So you picked this song. Why did you pick this song?
I picked this song because I grew up listening to it a lot in my room when I was just emotional over people and places and things. And I loved it so much because of just the different characters that Jeff Buckley is in that song. And the I don't know, I just feel like the song just like pulls me in so many directions, and it's just such a roller coaster. And it recently became popular on TikTok. I actually don't know. I mean, you could say that about so many songs, but it became really popular on TikTok to the point where it's his most popular song on Spotify now.
Wow.
When his Hallelujah cover was before that. And it was one of those songs that was like, well, you know, like I listened to it before. It was cool. So, but there's a reason it became so popular. So it would be cool. I want to talk about that.
Nice. Shall we get into a little Jeff Buckley information and then we'll get more into the song?
Sure.
I didn't know a lot of Jeff Buckley. I knew the name, but I didn't even know that he died young. But let's start with his life when he was living first. He was born in 1966. His name is Scott Moorhead. Moorhead was his stepdad's last name, and Scott is his middle name. So his dad was a musician called Tim Buckley, who died in 1975 from he OD'd at the age of 28. Yeah, so he kind of wanted to distance himself away from his dad at first, but then kind of came back to like the name Buckley. So his father was a musician, his mom was a classically trained pianist, his stepdad just introduced him to a whole bunch of music. Like, he listened to everything growing up, like Led Zeppelin. He listened to funk, jazz, reggae. He played all this stuff. He went to high school. He was in the jazz band. Went to the same high school as Gwen and Eric Stefani.
Oh, what? That's cool.
Also went to the same high school as Bob Caffrey, who's a baseball player who played for the Montreal Expos back in the 80s. Yeah, or at least was drafted by them. So yeah, that's my Canadian connection. Also went to the Musicians Institute of Hollywood, where he learned just like music theory and classically trained. And he kind of then bounced around. He was a session musician. He toured with a bunch of bands, just kind of here and there. So his dad's old manager, Herb Cohen, helped him make a demo of original songs. And then he started writing songs and playing like coffee houses. And he moved back like New York and LA. And his first album was Grace in 1993, which includes this song. And he did some concert tours and some other like live albums. And that's where we get to his death. It's kind of an out there story. I'm surprised I didn't know this. So in 1997, May 29th, he went swimming in the Wolf River Harbor in Memphis. And he was fully clothed. He was singing Whole Lotta Love by Led Zeppelin. And then there was a tugboat went by, and the wake from that kind of swept him underwater. And then they searched and searched. They couldn't find him till the next day when a passenger on the American Queen riverboat saw his body. And according to the autopsy, there were no drugs, no alcohol. He wasn't suicidal. It was just a freak accident.
It's crazy.
How did I not know that story? Like,
that's
do you
really
think it,
tragic.
Yeah, so so we really only have the one studio album from him.
Yeah, and that's what's so disappointing, I think, for a lot of Jeff Buckley fans, is that he passed away so young in his career. I mean, 30, when you really think about it, is very young. And I feel like the age, the standard for when you should be making it in your career seems so much lower now, at least for me. To have released your debut album 3 years before your death and to just never be able to record anything after that is really tragic.
And we hear about a lot of stars who they just the pressure of being a star that does it. But he just had a freak accident. So, you know, I was thinking like the 27, like Kurt Cobain, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin. But he just.
Yeah.
It was a whole different story.
Really, really, really tragic. And he was such a character, too. And just so I don't know. I don't know if there's any controversies surrounding him in particular, but. From what it seems, based on the videos and interviews I've seen of him, he just like seems like such a great person who didn't seem like an addict or like, I don't know. I mean, not to say that addicts are bad people. No, that's not what I mean. But he just seemed like such a good-hearted person. And like he really was going to do some big things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree because like working on that second album already and then I think it's really good that there was a lot of recorded stuff because it seems like a lot of like live concerts have come out afterwards.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I think he, like for fans of him, it's good to have that kind of material. Like there's a lot of stuff on there that like, is the same, but it's, I always like live concerts. So it's good to see that kind of stuff. Sorry, Erica gets in the way.
So what's his name? Her name?
Ava.
Ava and Avery.
We didn't name her. She came with a name, but it, there's been some confusion in the house.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
I
call him Ave a lot. So, you know.
Okay.
He was even working on like songs that were instrumental in concerts. Mm-hmm. Like I think it was Vancouver was and just, so he was, he had a lot.
Also a great guitar player. Like that's, I mean, and you can tell from his live albums and stuff. When I was doing some research for this podcast, I found the Seattle 1995 live album, and that was really fun to listen to because this is where I'm from. I can't remember the name of the venue it was.
I don't think I wrote it down.
Something?
Or was it the Cat something?
Yeah, it was the Cat something. It doesn't exist anymore in Seattle. There's probably an Amazon Prime store there because maybe it doesn't say on that
one. the king cat
yeah
I could see why you thought lion king cat. I could see that makes sense.
That tracks. But that was really fun to listen to, and he opens with Lover You Should Have Come Over in that album.
Yeah,
but he transitions into the song by playing Happy Birthday to his drummer, I believe. And then when he's playing live at the Chennai in New York, he does that song. And he also does like this long transition into it. So he's just, he likes to riff on the guitar, or he liked to riff on the guitar a lot. And that was really special.
So what do you like better, the live version or the studio version?
Probably the studio version. I really do like, I don't know. I think maybe, I just really love the records. It's really fun to see my favorite artists play my favorite songs live because you can actually see them emote. Mm-hmm. But at least for myself too, I'm like, oh, I sound fine live. I'm working on getting better live, but I just feel like I haven't got fully perfected my live act yet. And so I'm like, on stage, if I screw up, I'm like, just like listen to it. Like it's a lot better if you actually listen to the song. But I mean, that obviously does not apply to Jeff Buckley or anything. He sounds great live and in the record, but probably the record just cause it's just, it has, you know, it's mixed in the way that feels.
Tiger?
I also feel like, just bigger and more cinematic and just that feeling, that like upwelling feeling that I get when I listen to the song. But I also feel like it, a big selling point for Jeff Buckley is his voice. And sometimes I feel like, not just in his stuff, but in any artist's live recording, their voice gets overpowered by all the other instruments.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found his voice seemed a little bit different on the live version than the recorded version. When I was listening to the live version, I was like, it sounds a lot like Joel Plaskett almost. You may not know who Joel Plaskett is, but I know Lena does. He's an artist from the East Coast of Canada, and he's like, he's awesome. I felt that his voice was like somewhat similar in the live version, but not the recorded version.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wrote he almost sounded operatic in the studio version. And I was like, is operatic a word? But when he says young at one point, it kind of goes that way. I listened to both. I didn't ask Avery which one we were doing. So I did listen to it. But there was, in the studio, there was this kind of like pause in the music that almost sounded like it was skipping a bit. Did you guys find that? Like, it was just this different kind of sound that was like,
I didn't notice.
Wasn't in the...
With his voice or with just the whole...
Oh, the music. It seemed to like pause for a little bit. Maybe it was just...
There is like a pause, like when there's like a break.
Yeah, like half second little skips. Yeah. It was kind of cool. Yeah.
I like those. Yeah. Totally. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. But then it didn't really happen in the live version. So, I mean, his voice went from, like I wrote, twangy, operatic, like... I've heard it described, and it sounds like an insult, but I don't think this critic, I forget who wrote it, called it ethereal droning, which sounds like droning sounds like droning on, but I think they meant it as a good thing. And
I get that because I feel like his voice kind of like gets loud, like, like it quakes in a way and it gets loud and soft.
Yeah.
It's really pretty.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. He goes from bluesy to operatic, and because he can just go from that like really soulful chest voice to his head voice and his falsetto, and just not lose any pitch control over his voice. And I don't know. I think that's shown really well in this song.
Yeah,
I see what you're saying now, and I found that a lot on. I listened to the whole live album, and I found that in a few songs where it's like what you're saying is operatic. And the way you described it, Avery, is really good because you make the sound of it a lot better than just trying to picture of it.
Yeah.
And it's I could see that a lot in the whole album.
Yeah. He also, in the recorded version, uses this instrument called a harmonium at the very beginning. And that's cool because I don't think, he doesn't use it in the live stuff, obviously. That's cool and unique. That instrument, I'm not really sure, I can't remember where it's from, but it's not common in Western popular music, so that was cool.
I think the 90s was a time to play around with stuff like that too. Like the 90s seemed pretty anything. We always say like anything went in the 90s, like didn't have to fit in a box.
And that's what's so cool is like this song, I don't know. I feel like music today, and I mean, there's still amazing music that's being created today, but this song by Jeff Buckley has 25 chords, and he's the only credited writer on this song. He wrote this song. It has 25 different guitar chords. The lyrics are poetry, and it was one person that wrote this. And I feel like today, often I'll see like a four chord song, which like I write four chord songs. I write two chord songs all the time, and like 10 co-writers on like one of the biggest pop songs.
Yeah.
And so it's not to discredit today's music at all, but it's just there was, I think, more going on 30 years ago.
Yeah.
In that sense.
And we are not the kind of people who like 90s music, but think like there's no good music these days. And I find that when I read comments online, that's like everyone's like, no, there's no good music these days. But it's just, I don't believe that. There's still good music. Yeah, but the 90s had this, just more experimental, I think.
Yeah. You know? And less can be more, you know, like if there's more going on in the 90s. Like that can be really cool, but also like sometimes you just need those four chords, or you just need, you know, a simple beat. So, I'm with you. Both are good.
Yeah.
But actually a lot of people covered this song. I wrote down some names, but I knew none of these people. Nika Costa, a band Nothing But Thieves, Jamie Cullen. But I did know this. Natalie Maines of The Chicks did a cover on her solo album, which I didn't know.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I'd like to. I didn't have time. I just found it out right before we record it, but I'll look into that. So
yeah, I'll have to listen. When did she release her solo album?
I think it was 2013, which I didn't know she even did. So there you go. I learned two things and that this is on it. Yeah.
Nice.
It'd be great to hear about The Chicks on a podcast coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Did we?
Oh, cool.
Did we announce that yet? Or is that what we're announcing at the end?
Well,
okay.
We're going to
announce that after next week's episode.
Yeah. It's or a tomorrow, great tie-in.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I'm excited to tune into that. Yeah. The Chicks are awesome.
And some people, like John Mayer, you know, he listed as one of the best songs of all time. He thinks that. I think John Legend really names this as one of the best songs. It's on some like lists and stuff that I didn't write down. So big song.
Yeah. It's soulful. It's got, I think the lyrics are what really makes it too.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, I don't know, rock music might, I feel like a lot of people don't pay attention to the lyrics in rock music, or and they don't really have to, because just the music itself is great and the singing itself, it's great. But like when it's got great lyrics too, that's just adds to the poetry, or adds to the I don't know what the right word is.
I've also heard it return like folk pop and soul ballad and like ballad,
and
it's confused and confusing is the way another person described it, and especially with the lyrics. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really, I feel like the lyrics are pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
But they're really pretty either way.
Yeah. I didn't even make any sort of connection. Do you have a Canadian connection tonight? I don't want to forget.
I do. I do have a Canadian connection. The producer, Andy Wallace, for this album and this song, he produced a lot of stuff and a lot of big name artists. And one of the biggest names artists, Rush. So and Canadian. They are from Canada, so that's my Canadian connection.
Cool. And Rush, that's awesome.
And Rush are awesome. So
cool. Oh wow. I don't think I have a Canadian connection other than the song Vancouver that he wrote. But I don't know if he was talking about Vancouver or Canada, but I would assume he is.
Probably. It's the better Vancouver. Sorry, Vancouver, Washington.
Canada and Vancouver, Washington, yes. Definitely.
We talked earlier about another song, and it has a Canadian connection. You wanted to talk about the song Hallelujah as well, like that, which was written by Leonard Cohen. And
yeah, Leonard Cohen.
He's Canadian, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he is?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Jeff Buckley did a cover of that song, and that, before Lover, You Should Have Come Over, had like a big viral moment with My Generation. And the trend, I didn't really understand the trend that people posted on TikTok with this sound. It was like, because it seems like separate from the song. It was like born to be this, forced to be this. So or born for the weekend, forced for the weekdays. I don't know, just like something like that. So there's a bunch of trends under that sound, like in that kind of verbiage. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really understand that. But I think everybody can just agree, like, this song is so good, and just it's the bridge-ish end moment, the it's never over, that section is what went viral. And yeah, and I mean, that's definitely the best section of the song. So
it has a bit of an interesting history. Cohen released it in 1984 on an album.
I was on a segue again about Lover, You Should Have Come Over, but Hallelujah.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry.
Bringing it back to Hallelujah. So that Lover, You Should Have Come Over is its most popular album, but before it was Jeff Buckley's. Before Lover, You Should Have Come Over had its viral moment, Jeff Buckley's cover of Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen was his most popular.
Yeah.
For a good reason. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Like Cohen's, they didn't really, it wasn't a big song for him. They didn't like, when it first came out, and then John Cale of the Velvet Underground did a version in 1991 that Jeff Buckley kind of took as his inspiration. If you listen to Leonard Cohen's, it's a whole different song. But John Cale's, this is why it's called the Shrek song. It's his version on Shrek. But on the soundtrack for Shrek, it's Rufus Wainwright, not John Cale, but it's he's in the movie. It's kind of weird. And then Leonard Cohen started playing it after it had this like
cult resurgent. Following, yeah.
And he doesn't mind that so many people have covered it. Like over 300 artists have covered it. Katie Lang sang it at the opening for the Olympics. Like it's just a big song. But he's just like, yeah, it's getting press. That's good.
Yeah. I just feel like the original that Leonard Cohen put out, I mean, it's I feel like it's poetry over music. Because I feel like Leonard Cohen is less of a vocalist and more of a poet.
Yeah.
And I mean, his work is like, I love his work so much. Jeff Buckley's a vocalist. And then I didn't realize John Cale had done a version before Jeff Buckley. I always assumed it was Jeff Buckley's version that kind of popularized it. But I'm glad whoever did it, I'm glad it happened because I think it gave the song a really defined melody that people cover today. Cohen's version or Cohen's song was mostly just kind of like him kind of sing talking through the song, I feel
yeah.
like.
Yeah.
Well, that's his yeah. style.
Yeah, which is so cool. I mean, the lyrics are so, so, so cool. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad we have that in the world.
I'm going to say something that people can come at me for. I don't like the song because it's been so overplayed. If it plays to get my emotions now in a TV show or a movie, it turns, like, it doesn't make me sad. Yeah. It makes me angry. It's been so overplayed. And I didn't just, and that's what it is about the song, just so overplayed. Yeah. So to hear Leonard Cohen's version, which is nobody covers his version because you can't do his voice. They cover like more like this kind of style. But yeah, and it's just that it's been, yeah, I've heard it so many times that that's why I don't like it because I used to like it, but now it just, I've had enough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very emotional song.
Yeah.
And I think it's been definitely overplayed, like overused and, you know, the death of a character in a movie or, you know, sad montage. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. Although it was used perfectly in Shrek.
Yeah. 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 I will always defend that, the usage of it. Yeah.
I was listening to this album today, the live version of the album, and I was putting up a new fan in our bathroom. And there was a lot of cursing going on. And when I finally finished, this song came on. So it was kind of like fitting, like, hallelujah, I'm finishing this job of trying to get this bathroom fan installed.
Yeah. I just like, I totally understand. It's so overused. But I do think Jeff Buckley really did bring it, give it that, I don't know, that melody.
Yeah.
I'm going to say musical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree totally. With you. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's like Leonard Cohen's poetry meets like Jeff Buckley's vocal range and just like his voice or his musical melody, musical ability. Yeah, it's crazy. Jeff Buckley can sing like four different octaves or something like that. It's his range is nuts.
He's impressive. That's what I'm going to say. Impressive. Just I'm going to turn this around. We're going to talk about the album because we've talked about two of the major songs. Let's throw in a couple and just make it an album. Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
So on the album, Live from Seattle, he does some covers that I didn't realize were covers. Lilac Wine is a Nina Simone song.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that. It's kind of amazing. And I also listened a bit to Eartha Kitt, her version. And it's just, he does something different with it. He just changes it. Also, I didn't know. And just this just so maybe shows how I don't know a lot about music. But The Man That Got Away, I didn't know that song. It was for A Star Is Born in 1954, the second version out of four, for Judy Garland.
Oh, really?
And if you're going to do Judy Garland, like, that takes guts. And he did it well. Like,
amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was a cover either.
Yeah. Kangaroo, the last song, it's not easy to say that, is a Big Star song from 1978.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't think why we talked about them before, but I think they were a very influential band for a lot of people.
Yeah, Big Star is great.
And also, I mean, I knew this was a cover, but Kick Out the Jams mm-hmm. has kind of a fun backstory. It was actually called Kick Out the Jams, Motherfucker, by MC5, but it was back in 1969, and they had that name written on the inside of the album cover, but then the store Hudson's retail store didn't want to sell it because of that. So the MC5 took out a newspaper ad, and it was the whole thing, and it was a picture of one of the guys and just said, "Fuck Hudson's." And then Hudson's was like, "That's it. We're not selling anything from Elektra Records." So then Elektra dropped them. But I did like that about the live version, that he had that kind of those kind of like different songs, like fun to kind of like keep a balance. But yeah, I looked up this stuff and I needed to get it out. When I research some things, awesome. I have to get it out. So yeah.
And
so,
this was on the live in the Seattle album.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
It's like that Kick Out the Jams story was told on this podcast before.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember why, though.
I told it a couple months ago.
I don't pay attention to Avery sometimes. Or I actually have a horrible memory is what it is.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. Yeah, I think Jeff Buckley was mostly a cover artist for the longest time.
Yeah, but I find a lot of people do covers in album in concerts. Just
yeah.
That's kind of what I like to see, especially if it's a different cover. Like Lilac Wine is a little different. Also, Miley Cyrus did it in her backyard sessions, and it's amazing.
Oh, cool.
But different than Nina Simone, but yeah.
Right. Just
throwing that out
there. I always, whenever I play in Seattle a show, I always do a cover of All Apologies.
Okay.
And that is, it gets mixed reviews because A, it's not my genre, and B, it's kind of like, well, how dare you cover Kurt Cobain? It's weird. Like it's definitely it seems like controversial when I play it, but other people are like, "This is awesome," you know. But I always make sure to cover that when I play in Seattle. I love it.
That's awesome. Nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I would support it.
Yeah, I like to hear covers. Now, do you try to like emulate him, or do you do your own thing with it?
I mean, I definitely don't like change up the song in any way. But I don't try to emulate him. I don't know. I just like, I have so much fun when I'm performing. And one person came up to me and they were like, usually like, I hate it when people smile and sing Nirvana covers, but like you can get it. And so I don't know. I don't know. I'm like, oh gosh, maybe I shouldn't play this anymore. I don't know. I think it's such a great song.
You have our approval of doing
yes.
it.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. We could talk about Nirvana too, but
yeah,
that's as well. Just everything that happened there, but
yeah,
yeah. I love playing covers too.
Awesome.
Yeah, that kind of wraps. I've said everything about this album that I wanted that I wrote down and wanted to. I don't know if you guys have anything to add.
No, I just want to say thanks for picking this because I probably would not have picked it.
Yeah,
because I didn't know him, so I'm glad. I'm always glad to hear something that I've never really listened to before, whether that's an album, a band, or singer, or like a complete different genre as well. Like, I usually don't listen to this type of genre unless Lena picks this type of genre for us to listen to. So, yeah, I'm always excited to hear something new. So, thank you for picking this.
Of course. Yeah. I did, because I know you, when you first pitched the podcast, you were like, it's 90s albums. And I didn't grow up listening to a bunch of 90s music. And so I'm not really familiar with whole albums.
Yeah.
But, you know, I am familiar with like the hits off of each one. And I tried to listen to Grace by Jeff Buckley, like the whole thing. And I did. But there weren't very many standout songs to me. And I think a lot of people, it's so tragic that he died.
So Avery, can you tell us where to find your music and everything like that? Where can we find you on social media? And I'll put all the links in the show notes as well.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah. I am on all the streaming services along right there with Jeff Buckley. And I, yeah, it's just my first name and my last name, Avery Cochran, which I know you know how to spell. Do you have an E at the end? You do, right?
Yes.
It's
yes.
the exact same name, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Probably a different middle name, so I don't know yours. I'm guessing it's not Adam.
I imagine your middle name is Christine.
No.
No.
No. But yeah, my name is Avery Cochran. You can find me on Instagram at AVERCC and Spotify. And Avery and I of the podcast Avery and me, Avery, found on TikTok, which you can find me at Avery Cochran HQ. And yeah, I would love it if you guys checked out my music. Thank you.
I've checked it out and it's something different for me to listen to, but I enjoy it because I like I said earlier, I like listening to stuff that I don't usually listen to. So mm-hmm. I've been really trying to get out of my music comfort zone, if that makes sense. So
totally
expanding horizons.
Yeah. Yeah. Not stuck in just the rock and roll, heavy metal right. kind of thing all the time. So, which has been good because I've been learning so much. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Good. Good. It's always good to expand your horizons.
Avery, thanks again for being on. This was super awesome.
Yes,
really enjoyed it. So, yeah, I hope you sell a million albums and
get the 90s tunes bump.
Yes,
of course.
That's not a thing, yeah. But yet.
Till think about it. If either one of us get famous, whenever anybody looks up our name, one like the other one is going to get at least some clicks, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, smart. So.
Yes.
Whichever pops off first, the 90s tune podcast or my music.
Yeah.
And then I'll maybe take your fans and you'll take mine.
I'm sure it will be your career.
Yeah.
Awesome. Avery, thanks again for being on. Super awesome to have you. So
thank you guys. Be in touch.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right. See y'all.
Okay. Have a good bye. Night.